Are you able to recall what you were doing last Tuesday at around 4:30 p.m? Where you were, who you spoke with, what they were wearing? What if I asked you for such a recollection from 5 years ago, or maybe even 10? If there's a chance you're about 5 decades ago, how sharp your memory is viewed over that distance when it comes to a single event. These are just some of the difficulties facing a renewed focus on the disappearance and death of 20-year-old pregnant Karen Rowland on a summer evening 50 years ago in the usually sedate national capital of Australia, Canberra. I'm Nicole Overall, creator and host of the Capital Crime Files podcast, in which I explore this still open-ended mystery, these case file fragments providing updates and extra information pertaining to the investigation as it continues to unfold. As time slips away, with memories fading, people moving on or dying, the need to try to tap into as many recollections as possible is ever more pressing. If you are old enough and were in the region between February 26, 1971, when Karen vanished, and May 13 of that year when her remains were found, do you remember anything at all that could be even remotely connected? Or do you know anyone who might? Alternatively, have you heard something subsequently that could assist unlock the confounding case? There's even the chance for a connection or link further afield, to be looked at further in future episodes. On that basis, could you have heard, been told, or noticed something that might relate, even after so long? Indeed, is there anything about this situation you'd like to get off your chest? Because the one thing we know with certainty is that someone out there knows the truth. Can you help uncover it? I received an invitation to attend the Winchester Police Centre in the western Canberra suburb of Belconnen. The well-secured, somewhat bunker-like concrete building sits not far from the area's large shopping plaza, within walking distance to another of Canberra's artificially created waterways, Lake Ginninderra, constructed in 1974. It's the Australian Capital Territory, the ACT, headquarters of the Australian Federal Police, acronym AFP, named for one of its former assistant commissioners, Colin Winchester. In 1989, the dedicated policeman was gunned down in his own driveway by two bullets from an assassin's silenced Ruger semi-automatic rifle. Still something of a thorny issue to a degree, a local man who served almost 20 years for the murder was found not guilty in a 2018 retrial. I'll be discussing more on Assistant Commissioner Winchester's history in relation to his involvement in Karen's case at a later date. ACT Policing is the portfolio of the AFP responsible for Canberra, following a 1979 merger of the ACT Police of 1927 with the Commonwealth Police. I was at their headquarters to talk with the current lead investigator, Detective Sergeant Adam Reinhardt, for some of his insights on what remains one of the oldest unresolved criminal mysteries in Canberra's history. Ushered into the media room, just a table and small raised platform hosting a lectern emblazoned with the AFP badge, upon a silver wreath, the symbol of victory, the seven-pointed Commonwealth Star, representing the United States and Territories of the Australian Federation, formed on January 1, 1901. Topped by the Queen's Crown, such placement in military and police badges, a tradition reaching back to 1751, and bearing the National Coat of Arms of 1912, a shield with the emblems of the six states, flanked by a kangaroo and an emu. The room cocooned with a backdrop of a heavy navy curtain, almost a physical representation of what's referred to as the thin blue line, the men and women in uniform who serve and protect. Taking a seat across from the dark-haired detective who might potentially be in his mid-30s, as is often the situation, a well-trimmed beard making that a difficult judgment. He is, though, open and forthcoming, at least as much as he can be in the face of an ongoing investigation. Some of his answers are by needs off the record, but helpful for me regardless, in order to ensure that the most accurate picture possible becomes public record.
Well, I joined the AFP in 2005, and my first foray into criminal investigations was in about 2008, properly joining in 2010. So about 10 years within CI, and I think seven of those have been homicide-related investigations.
As with many a resident of the ACT, and not only those old enough to remember the actual circumstances, Karen's name wasn't unknown to Detective Reinhardt.
There's a job where, I think being a Canberra local, I knew of the job, or knew of the investigation to Karen Rowland, but never really knew much about it.
In late 2020, he was appointed to review local unsolved homicides and long-time missing persons. Despite the fact the official coronial inquest findings into Karen's death were inconclusive in virtually all respects, including the very nature of how she died, details of which will be explored at length in upcoming episodes, her case remains open, police continuing to probe for a more conclusive outcome. The current undertaking involves a re-examination of everything previously known, as well as pursuing newly emerging aspects.
We spend a considerable amount of time searching archives, searching the National Archives, forensics, exhibit offices, looking for to get as much information about the job as possible. We've even spoken with former members to get their recall about the investigation. So things that weren't written down or recorded or that we haven't obtained, try and get their view of the investigation as it was back in the 1970s. And I found it to be an absolutely fascinating investigation and quite a privilege to be involved. And I think as we go, we're finding more questions than answers.
According to Detective Reinhardt, public contributions in such circumstances can be of considerable value.
I think if one thing hasn't changed between 1971 and today is the investigation's reliance on the public. They needed the information 50 years ago from the public about what they might have seen or heard, and the same thing exists today. We are relying on someone that saw something or heard something, or that final bit of the jigsaw that we just don't have, that part hasn't changed.
My own earlier articles in publications such as Canberra City News about Karen and other local women who have disappeared without trace, died in suspicious circumstances or been murdered has also produced encouraging community interaction. So too this podcast, launched on December 9, 2020, the date that marked what would have been Karen's 70th birthday. Along with attempting to provide the most comprehensive and historically accurate coverage of the case to this point, the interviews with some of those directly involved and impacted, including Karen's younger brother Steve, who'd never before spoken publicly, has generated much response. Detective Reinhardt's view of the benefit of such initiatives is positive.
In the short time that we've been reviewing this investigation, and I've spoken to people saying, well, I've heard the podcast, I've spoken to Nicole, they're aware of the podcast and they're aware that Karen's investigation is still running and we're still looking for information that could help us. Even the smallest little bit of media, people are still remembering what they've got on their chest and want to tell us. So things like this podcast, if it helps generate a bit of information that might get some answers, then I'm very happy for it.
The explanation as to why people might have anything new to share now compared to then may range from perceived significance to concerns for the potential repercussions.
Well, in fact, there was an elderly lady who rang up who for 50 years she's held on to fear. She's held on to a story that she thought her ex-partner may have been involved in Karen's disappearance. And for so long she's been holding onto that and finally got it off her chest and said, well, I need to tell you about my situation, what happened to me way back when, and I feel that could be related to Karen Rowland's death and disappearance. So it could be someone holding onto something for 50 years through their own fear.
For others, it may be encountering a distortion of what actually occurred, including some of the more outlandish stories to have circulated over the years. Just one, the false assertion that Karen was in a relationship with a married man that could lead to people questioning or dismissing their own accounts.
Well, that's an issue with that false information. If a potential witness has correct information and they're being fed a story, that might make them reluctant to come forward and tell us.
Even in the face of the heightened activity and interest, the search remains a challenge for a multitude of reasons, as acknowledged by Detective Reinhardt.
Sometimes we don't know exactly what we are looking for or what exists. So we might be searching for a long time for something that has either been disappeared or destroyed a long time ago or never existed. So we've got to ask the questions. We've got to go and ask people tough questions and ask and look in areas that we might not think there'll be something to find, but we need to say with a hand on our heart that we have looked for everything and obtained as much as we can.
In addition to evidence that may no longer be accessible or even able to be located, the quality and variance of recollections, as well as the opportunity to re-verify them after so long, poses problems of its own.
Some people have approached us 50 years later saying, I gave this information back in the 70s and this is my information again today. And some of the information is exactly the same as they remember it. And that information in the 70s was investigated and looked into. It's just a little bit harder now to go back and find records to corroborate what they're saying. So things like motor registry details, they're very hard to find if you can find them at all.
Something generations born after the mid-1990s can scarce imagine is a time when mobile phones were only the stuff of imagination. Think Secret Agent Maxwell's smart shoe phone in the 60s or the 1946 appearance of cartoon crime fighter Dick Tracy's wristwatch radio. From the late 60s, Canberrans were early adopters of telephones in the home. Should, though, a need to call arise when out back in that day, it required finding a public telephone or a service station that had one, not forgetting that you'd have to have handy the coins to use it. In 1971, along with these options not being overly in abundance in the capital, neither truly offered the chance for someone to track your final movements in the event that all other trace of you vanishes.
Major difference between 71 and today is our reliance on things like CCTV, mobile phones, that digital footprint that we all leave without realising it. That didn't exist 50 years ago, so we're relying on purely on witness details. Someone to remember a rego, someone to remember a make and model of a car or description of someone that they saw. Whereas today, we've got a little device in our hip pocket that follows us and tells us everything.
Of course, such technologies don't always provide solutions, even in the modern day, as demonstrated by the case of 18-year-old backpacker Theo Hayes, last seen at Byron Bay on the north coast of New South Wales on May 31, 2019. Theo's last received signals from his mobile came from the vicinity of the clifftop upon which stands the Cape Byron Lighthouse. Notwithstanding, as of January 2021, the young Belgian man's ultimate fate remains unknown. In Karen's situation, the complete absence of these types of additional, potentially crime-solving tools doesn't make things any easier. Despite the lack of physical evidence that could be sourced in Karen's case, a large volume of other material and information was retained by the police. Now again the subject of scrutiny, it is held close, but more details about it all, how much remains, and what may otherwise have happened to components of it, will feature in forthcoming episodes in the first season of this podcast.
So whilst we might not have the physical evidence, then we've still got the witness accounts, we've still got the statements, we've still got information about what they might have seen or heard. I mean, not every investigation is solved on DNA.
Detective Reinhardt confirms that earlier investigators indeed spoke with literally hundreds of people, a smaller percentage providing what might be deemed more valuable contributions. Whittling down those numbers is another time-consuming element of the entire process.
I can't give you an exact number, but there are plenty, yeah. I mean, you compare an occurrence sheet where they say, I spoke to the person X. Versus a witness statement. In terms of how many people they've spoken to, it would be certainly in three figures. I mean, who knows how many witness statements we have that are directly involved with Karen's murder and disappearance. Hopefully one day we'll give you an exact number. But there's plenty of statements and plenty of pieces of information that the investigators compiled over the time.
Fingerprints were also recovered from what was found when Karen's body was located in May 1971. Regardless of what we see on crime-busting TV dramas, though, this is the real world, and it's rarely as easy as depicted.
I mean, fingerprinting was a thing. What we have available to us has been fingerprinted or reviewed. They're not for a standard that we can make any identification. Maybe it was never, ever a good enough sample or a good enough print.
So too a relatively lengthy list of persons of interest, which Detective Reinhardt and I discussed at some length, also to later be explored more fully.
The investigation, I think, at last count that I had looked, was over 30 or so people that were nominated as potential offenders. And even today, that list is growing as people are providing us more information. And they investigated every single person to work out where they were, what they were doing, try and corroborate an alibi if one existed. I mean, some can be ruled out straight away, but also there's a smaller list of people that you can't rule in and you can't rule out.
Karen's ex-fiancé, their engagement called off only a few months before she vanished, and the father of her keenly expected child, was one person of interest who continues to generate much discussion. Detective Reinhardt confirms the official view that her former partner was ruled out early as a serious consideration in anything untoward, and his checked and corroborated alibi remains consistent.
The ex-partner was one of the first inquiries that they made, even on the night when Karen was reported missing. They spoke with him, got his version of events of where he's been and what he has done. And the investigation then went to corroborate his alibi and prove that he was where he was at the time. So he was eliminated as suspect and remains that way today.
Policing, detective work and the judicial process itself has also evolved over the intervening decades, as Detective Reinhardt explains.
The expectation of the community and the court system about what's required for a homicide investigation has changed quite a lot. I know we dot the I's and cross the T's probably more than we should, but there is a good reason for that, and that makes sure our investigations and convictions withhold are strong. Back 50 years ago, they did the same inquiries, however, not to the same depth or without realising what might be required 50 years later. They did a great job. In fact, there's far more material in the investigation than I realised. And they were very, very committed to the investigation, and it shows with the amount of work we have recovered.
In answer to questions on whether cases such as Karen's are a lost cause, given the time that's elapsed, comes the successful unmasking and convictions of the American serial rapist and murderer Joseph DeAngelo, and closer to home, the Claremont killer in Perth. The crime spree of DeAngelo, aka the Golden State Killer, spanned 40 years, 11 Californian counties, and dozens of victims. He'd be brought undone by DNA and genetic matching, courtesy of a genealogy website. Not, though, without controversy around the potential ethical implications of people's genetic information being used without their express knowledge in order to solve crimes. DNA and fibre evidence also assisted in solving the almost 25-year-old murders of two young women that traumatised residents of Perth. In late 2020, Bradley Edwards received a life sentence for both, as well as a 1988 rape and another assault on an 18-year-old female 2 years after that. However, such forensic techniques weren't even a hypothetical consideration in 1971, the first DNA-based case not until 1985. And for that, some physical evidence that may still bear even the tiniest traces is required. In the face of all of these elements, the Canberra investigation of Karen's perplexing case continues. No stone left unturned, no witness statement unread.
What we're trying to do in part of this review is not only get new information or that same information provided again, but reviewing the documents from 1971 and working out what avenues of inquiry have been ticked off and what avenues of inquiry are still outstanding. So we will identify what further work needs to be done and how we can go about achieving that work. It's no small job. I mean, there's boxes and boxes of material available to us, and we are going through page by page, statement by statement, trying to work out what exists and what opportunities are available to us.
Detective Reinhardt is also mindful to point out that not all of the progress, findings and dash disappointments when it comes to red herrings can be relayed in real time.
I mean, if we advertise every step that we make, then we're planning an opportunity for someone to create a defence in court later on, or for the investigation to be sidetracked in a way that it shouldn't be. So whilst I'd love to tell everything about the investigation, there's very good reasons why we don't do that.
With so much to cover, rediscover and uncover, the path forward is still one filled with uncertainty, hurdles and ever more sand through that hourglass.
Going through all those records and reading them, everyone's review or view of what they saw doesn't make it clear as to what actually happened. And when you're not ready to pay attention, you know, you could do it all the time. What was that car we just saw? We drove past. You'll get different answers from everyone, really.
All involved are acutely aware of the pressures and the expectations that weigh upon them from so many quarters.
I think Karen's case is certainly one of the more interesting ones, where it's just one of those ones you want to know what happened. I mean, it's not fair that a family lost a daughter and a sister in such unusual and quick circumstances. Quick in terms of it just happened like that. And it didn't need to be long. It was just a fleeting opportunity, and before you know it, a family's life has been changed forever.
The more personal nature of such a tragedy in what remains a relatively small community, as has been proven to me personally throughout the research and preparation for this podcast, it's rarely 6 degrees of separation in these parts, more like 2, means it has impacted many and continues to resonate down that tunnel of passing years.
You know, I've seen those 2 white lines on Parkes Way, and, you know, sort of almost gives me chills driving past it, knowing what happened at that spot 50 years ago, you know, well before I was around. But, you know, now I know all about it and want to give answers to Steve and family.
Still to come in Capital Crime Files, more in-depth details of the elements discussed during this interview and additional information, including the emergence of a name that will give most who hear it pause, no less than the man dubbed the backpacker killer, Ivan Milat.
Well, that is a significant part of the investigation, and that's at the moment where we are. I can't rule him in, and I certainly can't rule him out. But that doesn't mean we're not going to try.
For more, find us at capitalcrimefiles.com.au. Subscribe wherever you download your podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.